thinking big thoughts so you don't have to.
Well, that's ambitious.
Here's John Williams.
109, live at the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. This is John Williams. A little bit of milky sunshine downtown Chicago. It's not such a bad day. Here until 3 o'clock with lots of ground to cover. Let's get started with what's been happening in Washington. James Comey, the FBI director, has been testifying before Congress. And while they had some specific things they wanted to get at, everybody knew what everybody wanted to get at. And that is, let's continue to talk about the election of 2016. Now, you remember just before the election, James Comey sent a letter to Congress and he said, I just think you guys should know that there's more emails that we're going to investigate. And we believe that there's a threshold high enough here that we should at least tell you that the investigation, in fact, has to go forward. We thought it was closed. The investigation goes forward. That's a week before the election. He didn't know what the email were going to contain. He didn't know if it was going to be hurtful or harmful, but he just knew that there were some more email and that he should tell Congress and therefore the world, cast still a larger shadow of doubt over Hillary Clinton in that email story. About that yesterday, 2 days ago, Hillary Clinton was being interviewed by Christian Amanpour, and this is part of what the former First Lady had to say about that thing.
It wasn't a perfect campaign, but I was on the way to winning until the combination of Jim Comey's letter on October 28th and Russian WikiLeaks raised doubts in the minds of people who were inclined to vote for me but got scared off. We overcame a lot in the campaign. We overcame an enormous barrage of negativity, of false equivalency, and so much else. But as Nate Silver, who, you know, doesn't work for me, he's an independent analyst, but one considered to be very reliable, you know, has concluded, you know, if the election had been on October 27th, I'd be your president. And it wasn't. It was on October 28th. Ask yourself this. Within an hour or two of the Hollywood Access tape being made public, the Russian theft of John Podesta's emails hit WikiLeaks. What a coincidence. Did we make mistakes? Of course we did. Did I make mistakes? Oh my gosh, yes. You know, you'll read my confession and my request for absolution. But the reason why I believe we lost were the intervening events in the last 10 days.
I have two questions for you. One is, do you agree with that? And number two, if you do or don't, what do you think of Hillary saying as much? What do you make of her now finally saying, you know what, I would have won if the election were, she said no, October 28th, you know what she meant in November. It was the next day the letter comes out. And Nate Silver, by the way, I think that's a little interesting distinction too. Much of the sound bites you're hearing from this are Hillary Clinton saying, if the election were on October 27th, I would have won. I don't know that this distinction is really that interesting to you, but she's not saying that herself. She's saying Nate Silver said that. She came to that conclusion. We all came to that conclusion because people like Nate Silver were saying Hillary's going to win the election. This is what our polling is telling us. Either the polling was wrong or it changed on that FBI investigation. It changed on the Comey letter. I'm asking you if you buy that. And number two, true or false, what do you make of her saying this? Is this Hillary sort of being a sour sport about it all? You know, one of the clips they played on the CBS Morning News today was one of the late night comics, Trevor, what's his face?
Noah.
He's pretty good. And he said, yeah, I won that race until Usain Bolt ran faster than me. You may not like the outcome, and we know you don't like the rules of engagement, but you lost. You lost. And I don't know if what you heard there was her owning it or her making excuses or her just matter-of-fact telling the truth of the matter. But, in fact, did the letter cost her the election? Okay, so here's James Comey talking about this today. All if we have two sound bites. First of all, this is him saying that if he had not issued the letter, it would have been the death of the FBI.
One of my junior lawyers said, should you consider that what you're about to do may help elect Donald Trump president? And I said, thank you for raising that. Not for a moment, because down that path lies the death of the FBI as an independent institution in America.
I'm going to ask you to play that again here, Elif. That's interesting to me. Steve, I don't know what you're hearing there, but I'm hearing him say that we're autonomous and we can't have any political considerations. I get that. But I think you should also be at least a little responsible for what you're acting on. And what he doesn't say there is there was nothing there. And we had no proof that there was anything there. Shouldn't that have given him more pause? This is the way he put it.
One of my junior lawyers said, should you consider that what you're about to do may help elect Donald Trump president? And I said, thank you for raising that. Not for a moment, because down that path lies the death of the FBI as an independent institution in America.
Okay, so then later on in that, he said, here's cut number two, Elif. This is where he says he is. Now, knowing what we know, does he think that he did the right thing?
I've gotten all kinds of rocks thrown at me, and this has been really hard, but I think I've done the right thing at each turn. I'm not on anybody's side. So hard for people to see that.
He wouldn't do it differently. 312-981-7200. Let's pick up some phone lines. We'll start with John. Jump in there, John. What did you want to say about that? Hi.
Hi. I think Hillary is just expressing sour grapes. America didn't trust her to begin with. And if anybody thinks that what we're hearing now is the truth any more than what we heard through the entire campaign, I think they're extremely misguided.
That's John. Thanks for the call. We'll go from you to, I think this is Max. Max, you're on the air.
John, Hillary should retire, and that's it, and leave it to Bernie Sanders to become president. She did not visit Wisconsin one time, John, not once.
Thanks for the call, Max. We'll go from Max to Jeff. Jeff, you're on WGN.
Hey, John. Yeah, for me, it was all Benghazi, and the subsequent hearings afterwards, I found her very distasteful and very untrustworthy and absolutely no remorse. So that's why I didn't vote for her.
Thanks for the phone call. You know, if you think that the Comey thing was unfair or the FBI investigation was unfair, I think hanging her on Benghazi was the most unfair of them all. I don't think Benghazi, those guys did not die because of Hillary Clinton. And the biggest sin that the Clintons made, that Hillary Clinton made and the State Department made at the time was not having their talking points together when they went on the shows or when they talked to the American people. I'm not saying that's a sin for which you should not be punished. But should that cost you the election? I'm not so sure it should. More of your phone calls. Tom, you're on WGN. Hi.
Hi. On the morning of the election, when everybody was predicting a runaway victory by Hillary, nobody was crying about the FBI leaks. Nobody was saying WikiLeaks has tied itself in with the Russians to influence this election. There were no problems. Then she lost. All the professional pollsters like Nate Silver were wrong. And now that we're hearing excuses, and they're all lame excuses.
I just don't agree with that.
I think there is a difference here.
Well, but I don't agree with that. I mean, there was a lot of talk. There was great criticism of Comey at the time. There was great criticism of Comey in July when he exonerated her and more from the other side when he reopened it. Remember Marco Rubio talking about WikiLeaks during the fall before the voting said, hey, Republicans, we shouldn't be making hay out of this because we could be next. So,
well, did we know at the time that the FBI was investigating the Trump team?
No. And so that's the trickiest part of all this. So because it was before Congress, Comey felt obligated to come out and say we reopened it. But because no one knew about the Trump thing, there was no obligation or duty to come out and say we're investigating him. Right? Does that make sense?
Steve, all your points are valid. But my point is that the secretary's complaints now were not her complaints on the morning of Election Day. It was only after she lost that she started looking around for why she lost and started blaming people other than herself.
Okay, but wait a minute. So your point is that if she's supposed to be consistent, then she should have been complaining about this before the final votes were counted. Is that what you're saying?
Yes. Okay. And if it were me, I would have said I should never have operated the State Department as a black operation on a non-governmental computer system. I was trying to avoid oversight and now I got to pay the price.
Yeah. Tom, thanks for the phone call. I'm glad you're listening. This is Mary. You're on WGN. By the way, I don't know if there's a Hillary Clinton fan club out there, but we haven't heard from them yet.
There is. They're all at a meeting right now.
Yeah. She's absolutely right. I mean, my God, if we wouldn't be in this mess if she was president with the narcissistic, egotistical dictator that's in there now. And I think she's absolutely right. I'm just sorry she didn't wasn't stronger before the election. And it took her a long time to come out. Now I'm happy to hear from her. So
I think thanks for the call, Mary. I think her timing's been interesting. It's been 103 days. By the way, when are we going to stop counting the days? Really? I mean, I think it's time for us to stop counting the days now. I figure whatever 300 and how many days in a year? 352, 365?
I think this year there's 365.
365 days. Right. Multiply that by four. That's probably how many days there are going to be in this thing. And it doesn't maybe help any of us to count them up or down. But she has been absent from this conversation largely for the first 102 or three of them. She really hasn't been saying much. And I think that's to her credit. And that's why I'm a little disappointed that she's coming out now. At some point, she gets to have her say, maybe in the book, maybe now, but it does sound a little sour grapes-ish to me. And this is a guy who voted for her. This is Marlene. Why are you laughing at me now?
You didn't just vote for her. You threw a party.
You have to bring that up.
I was thinking of it today, in fact.
Why were you thinking of it today?
I don't remember, but just because weren't there little blue drinks or something?
Yes, we had a blue signature cocktail.
Yeah.
And then we had a Hillary cardboard cutout.
And your election night party.
And then we had some party favors that had Trump on them or Hillary on them.
Right. I'm sure it was all very cute.
And we had it catered. Mm-hmm. And we invited all of our friends. And we expected we might have as many as 50 people there. And everybody, you may recall that day, sort of had a sick feeling in their stomach, right? I mean, either way, it was just such a torture to get to election day, and you did not know the outcome. And even though she would win by 3,000 votes the popular election, she lost the electoral, so it was really on a knife's edge.
Well, I mean, she lost the popular, too, with the voter fraud.
What do you mean by that?
Well, millions of people voted illegally.
Oh, that's right. She didn't even win the...
Once that investigation gets underway, you'll see that.
Yeah, I haven't heard much about that lately. Getting back to the party we had... So then we started to get calls about the time of the party. Like the idea was the returns would come on around 7 o'clock. That's when the polls would all be closed. So the food would be hot, the drinks would be blue, and we would all have a swell time. And about 6:30 or so, we started to get calls from people saying, you know what, I can't make it. Some of them couldn't make it, and some of them said, I can't enjoy it. I'm too nervous this evening to come and enjoy a party. And so we said, okay. And then people got there. And as they got there, they were, you know how when you come to a party and there's a bunch of people, some you know, some you don't, and there's cocktails and there's food and the game's on the TV. Well, the TV was on and people were in there. And the volume was down in the room. And people were watching it a lot more intently than I thought they would. And nobody was enjoying the show. And as a result, the party wasn't really getting the sort of energy that I'd hoped it would. And the display of all of the hot catered food.
And you said, hey, they're blue tortilla chips.
That's what I was kind of doing. I was going, have you guys tried this Indian? This is really good. We have a lot of it, too. I mean, we have a lot of food. And a couple of my friends were accommodating me, but nobody else could eat. And then one by one, they started to leave.
It's not funny. I'm not laughing at you. It's just...
And so as we got towards the end of the evening, there were just a few of us left there. I couldn't leave because it was at my house.
Brenda, did she stay?
She's there the whole time. Okay, God bless her. And there was just sort of this shell-shocked look on their faces. And it was a memorable party that way. We'll never forget it.
Mm-hmm.
It was almost an appropriate way to sort of experience that election night. It was shocking. And the shock was on display right there before me. People sitting there with laps full of cold Indian food and half-drunk blue cocktails. one by one dismissing themselves into that night. Many of them we still haven't heard from. Well, listen, I'm going to stop talking like this. We'll pick up more phone lines in a minute. All right, let's just take the last few more phone calls. It's 127 on WGN. John Williams here. By the way, the star of the new Bachelorette in Paradise is in the green room. Am I right? Is he in the green room?
Yes, he is. It's Bachelor in Paradise, by the way.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, this is the Bachelor in Paradise is going to be in our studio.
The green room's for whichever way you identify yourself.
That's right.
Right.
Last few phone calls on this. Let's go to line four, and that's Bert. You're on WGN. Hi, Bert.
Hey, John.
Hey.
Hey, I don't understand how Comey does not understand how unfair he has treated Hillary. All he had to do when he found computer was go to a classified setting in the senators and tell the people, this is what we found. We're going to do the investigation. And then if something comes out of it, then they can tell the public. But no, he sent a letter to the public, to the Congress, and all sorts of people can see the letter to the Congress. Now, what was wrong with him doing that? And he's not being fair, because why wouldn't he tell the public about the Russia investigation? That's much more concerning to me than some stupid email thing. And I don't think you're being fair to Hillary. She was in a forum where she was asked about this.
Yep.
She's not going public.
That's true.
Saying, hey,
that's true.
And she said she was at fault. She said, yeah, of course I was at fault. And so was definitely, and I definitely think Comey caused her to lose the election.
Well, that's why I brought it up, and that's why I played the longer cut of it, because you don't always hear her in these clips that you're hearing on the radio and TV today, the part where she said, Nate Silver said that, and I say this, I screwed up. Lord, I screwed up. She owns it that way, too. And I appreciate your point that the reason it came up was she was asked, although she knew she was going to get asked that when she sat down with Christiane Amanpour. Bert, thanks for the call. I go from you. One more quick call, and then we're done with this today. This is Jackie. What did you want to say, Jackie?
I agree with the caller that just called in about the unfairness of Comey. He does not play both sides. And then I think Hillary is an intelligent, well-educated, well-qualified individual, and that's why she waited this long. She wanted to see Trump fall on his face, which he has. And now it's appropriate. If he would have been successful, she may not have, you know, done this. But since he is so unsuccessful.
Yeah. Can you imagine what it's like? I wonder if, you know, while all of us are a little tortured by some of the things we're seeing, I wonder if that gives her some sort of grim satisfaction that Trump is as wild as. I mean, I thought about this the other day on the 100 Days. I thought when Trump got elected, you thought, okay, maybe it'll be great. Maybe it'll be terrible. It'll probably be somewhere in between. I actually think it's been far crazier than even I would have imagined. Do you agree with that,
and I
Jackie?
I think it's these politicians give their life. This is what they do. They know it so well. They're so qualified to have somebody that's not playing by the rules is just disheartening for them.
Jackie, thanks for the phone call. It's 1:31. We'll pause here. Steve Bertrand has the news. By the way, speaking of what's happening on Capitol Hill, the story about healthcare today is fascinating. And Jimmy Kimmel's monologue last night or a couple nights ago deserves a longer play. You'll hear that. Still to come on WGN. Almost paradise. We're knocking on heaven's door. It's 1:39. In our studio, Daniel McGuire. You know him from The Bachelorette and Bachelor in Paradise 2016. If you're coming downtown onto Michigan Avenue and you are looking into our showcase studio, I'm the one wearing the purple sweater. It's probably difficult if you can just looking through the glass to know which of us is the model bachelor and which of us is the 57-year-old talk show host. So I've worn a purple sweater, and that might help you. And then he has on a blue long-sleeve shirt and muscles or whatever you call those things. Daniel, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
okay, you were on The Bachelorette.
Yeah, that was last season, and the new season is starting pretty soon.
So that means you were one of the guys vying for the attention of the girl.
Yeah, 25 guys try to fight for one girl's attention who you don't know anything about, and who I didn't know anything about, and I don't know. It was a weird situation. Learned pretty quick that it's not something that normally happens, right?
You got that right.
And
well, you had never been on TV before. You hadn't been. Had
no.
You done?
No, not really. No, I'd say no.
Well, I mean, but that whole thing has to be sort of surreal. Anyway.
Yeah, it's strange. I got used to it pretty quick, but it is strange. You know, all the cameras around, and you know, the producers ask you questions, and you know, guys fighting for a girl's attention, which I don't like fighting for a girl's attention unless I was like really, really into her, but.
You don't even know this girl.
Yeah, and I wasn't into her either, so it's hard. It's still like...
Oh, really? So from the get-go, you thought, if I don't win this, I'm cool with that.
Oh, could care less, yeah.
But you were obligated to do the show.
Well, because it's... Well, not just that. I didn't want to lose. I was competitive, and, you know, I still wanted to give it a chance, right?
But is it hard then when you have your one-on-one moments with her to really genuinely try and win her affection when you aren't into her?
Yeah, well, I mean, I still wanted to, like, give it a chance. It wasn't not like 100% no, but I was like... It wasn't like when I saw her, I was like head over heels. And, you know, when you first see a girl or whatever you're into, you first like have that connection. No, I wasn't even close.
Yeah. How much of the interactions are set up by the producers? You know, like you say this or you do that, or these girls aren't getting along or these guys aren't getting along. So let's have a scene where X. How much of that goes on?
So I guess is it like scripted in a sense? I mean... So when the guys are just hanging out in the mansion, there's stationary cameras and then cameras walking around and, you know, just watching and recording your conversations. And then once in a while, they'll be like, okay, something's going to happen. Okay, you know, stay around or whatever. Or the producer will ask a question to get a conversation started or whatnot. But, it's still fairly open for the most part.
Well, I think that's my answer to that question has always been the Bachelor series or any of them, that while maybe some of it is artificial, you are what you are. So even though this is kind of weird, who are these guys? And I'm not even into this particular girl, but your personality does sort of come forward, right?
Yes and no. So, for example, they can pick and choose whatever they want to air, you know, as in, because it's up to them. You know how many to say. And number two, you can totally be someone else. You can be whoever you want to be. And if the producers, I don't know, every show is different. The producers might, I don't know, I'm not saying this is my case, but they might be like, okay, be excited about this or how beautiful is so-and-so. So like, you know, they can, you're not, none of us are actors. So we're not like reading a script or anything, not like that or, you know, but they might be like, be excited about this or whatever.
Right.
I don't know, but.
Were you yourself in the show?
On The Bachelorette, I was myself. But they only showed parts of it. So, I mean.
Were you happy with how you were portrayed?
For The Bachelorette, yeah. I mean, I wasn't disappointed or anything. But I wish they showed a little bit more of me instead of just like the drunk crazy one, I guess. And that was kind of like me.
Oh, there was some drunk crazy you
understand? I wasn't that drunk. But yeah, I guess there's definitely some alcohol involved.
So when that's going on and you guys are doing the drunk crazy. You know they're rolling, right?
Of course. The best thing is, I have no shame. I'm not embarrassed. I'm just being myself. But they don't show the other. They didn't show the other parts of me
again, guys.
Because I only went halfway through this season, so they could only show so much. If I went the whole way, and then they would probably would have showed a little bit more of me. But also because I only have an hour or two each week to show, right?
Right. So, stuff's got to get cut. The editing is the hell of it.
Yeah, and then exactly, and then on Paradise. I was more happy with my edit because they showed more of me.
Okay, now wait a minute. So you were on The Bachelor.
Yeah.
Then you go on Bachelor in Paradise 2016.
Yeah.
So because you were a known commodity to them, they go, hey, that's a good-looking
guy. They're run by the same producers.
Same thing. So then, but I don't suppose everybody gets invited.
No.
And Bachelor in Paradise was 10 women, 10 guys.
Roughly, I think it's like 10 and 9 starts off with this. Roughly about that. Yeah.
And then you were paired up.
You're trying to find a girlfriend or boyfriend or whatever you're into. And
I see.
You're trying to get engaged by the end of it.
So did you match up with somebody?
There was never any big sparks, but I still wanted to see what was out there and give it a chance.
For God's sakes, man, you have 10 of the most beautiful women on TV, and we can't find somebody for you on two shows?
I would disagree. Not the most 10 beautiful. I mean, they're just 10 random girls, basically. Let's just put it that way.
So none of
none of them are models or anything like that.
A model.
I have modeled. I'm not currently modeling right now.
Right.
But
so none of them were wow.
No, not for me. No.
And were any of them at least personally very interesting to you and you thought, this is great?
Personality-wise, yeah, there were some where I'd be friends with and I'd hang out with, but not that I would, you know, be in love with just from personality-wise.
Yeah. So was that kind of disappointing? You survey the room and you go, you know, I'm going to do this thing again, but...
Again, I just wanted to see what I kind of played along and, you know, kind of made it seem like I was interested and tried my best and, you know, see what I could work with. But you can only do so much. You know, to be realistic about the whole thing, you know, you need a bigger selection of women or just some luck on your side sometimes, you know?
Right. Well, that's the conceit of the show has always been a little preposterous. The idea that via a game show, a man and a woman could find true love and be married. Mm-hmm. And that's The Bachelor. In fact, when they did the first one, you know, we all watched it and we thought, okay, that was kind of cool. But really, I didn't think there'd be legs to the series because they wouldn't, in fact, get married season after season. Mm-hmm. And we'd realize this doesn't work. The Bachelor or The Bachelorette don't find true love. It can't happen.
Well, I kind of say this, but obviously they're not going to do this and they can't do this for whatever reasons. But for things to be possible, for me at least, you know, I would say, okay, this is what kind of woman I'm looking for. And they narrow that down to 1,000 out of, say, 100,000 applied or 10,000 applied. And then out of that 1,000, I would line them up and be like, okay, just from basically off looks, just get down to 100. Then from that 100, then we have like a 5-minute, you know, little, not interview, but a little 5-minute speed
this
date.
This is the way they cast. This is the way they cast American Idol. You know, they have them line up and they come up to him and go sing. And 10 seconds in, they go yes or no.
What I mean?
Yes or no?
Yes or no? This is just 10 random girls where it's like it could be totally qualities that I'm not looking for. Say,
okay, so would you be involved in this sort of power?
Well, again, they could start off the beginning from the huge thing.
But then
you want to like...
You'd like to run through the line of 100
and like,
or
1,000. Yeah, and then get down to 25. And then after there, then you have such a better chance of actually finding love, you know?
Okay, so that would be the ideal show if you were the single bachelor.
Of course.
Yeah, I could deal with that too, by the way. So you were... You didn't have that. You were paired up with these limited number of people. You did find a quote-unquote mate, but you and she didn't get married.
We weren't even like considered. I wouldn't even consider. It was just like friendship level. Yeah.
So then that ends.
Yeah.
And so then what happens?
As for
you, like, what do you do now?
Oh, well, I mean, since the show's finished, airing in first week of September, I've been personal training. I've been working in a restaurant. I've been doing appearances. I've done some other TV shows, which can't yet talk about until they start.
Yeah,
they're about to get aired.
And
by
there's a show that you're going to be on, but we'll respect that.
Yeah.
Well, why does it say this here? Though it does say on the press release here, it says you have signed to star in the new Bachelor in Paradise All Stars 2017, shooting this June, premiering in August.
That's new to me. I'm not aware of that.
Congratulations.
I don't know where that came from, but no.
Would you be okay with that?
I would go back on Paradise.
I wonder what that would be. What would Bachelor in Paradise All Stars?
I've never heard of that. This is totally new to me.
Okay, this is my guess. They'll take some of the people's favorite bachelors and bachelorettes,
which
from
they
kind of
do
seasons,
usually,
and then they'd
they usually often do is they get some people from the past seasons. Some people were quote unquote big on social media, someone quote.
Well, is there somebody you would love to be paired up with on one of those shows? One of the bachelorettes?
There are some girls that.
Give me some names because we're on the air right now. I can make some phone calls. We can make that happen. Who'd you like to be on The Bachelor in Paradise All Stars?
You're putting the pressure on me now.
Well,
boy,
I mean, are there any that come to mind?
Oh, man, you're putting me on the pressure because if I say one, then...
No, they'll get over it if you don't remember them all. I mean, people win the Oscars and they don't mention everybody. But who would be good on your list?
I've spoken with... These couple girls were on this most recent season.
Yeah.
Lacey.
Lacey, right.
She was... I've talked with her a little bit.
Is that kosher or is it okay for you to sort of shop other shows, bachelorettes or...
Well, that's what happens is... These people, guys and girls, it's a small little network, and everyone kind of gets to know each other, some more than others, depending on what city you live in. For example, you live in L.A., a bunch of guys and girls might live there, and they get together, and, you know, they do events together or parties or whatnot.
Have a common experience. Okay, so Lacey, who else would you like on that one?
This girl named, I never met her before, but Whitney, she's a good-looking girl. I've never met her, but...
get Whitney on the list.
Another girl, Danielle. She's
probably
a nurse.
Helps if you know their last names.
Horrible with names. Well, but I can't name anybody.
You want to be sincere. You want to show them that you're there for them.
Unfortunately, I'm just one of those people. I'm just bad with names.
Yeah, that's a skill set we all have to work on. I'm terrible with names.
I'm so bad. I've worked with people for like 4 summers at a restaurant. But and didn't know their names after four summers. I mean, they're back in the kitchen, so a little different, separate, but you know.
Well, so we've already seen you in The Bachelor and Bachelor in Paradise 2016. So hopefully we'll see you on this other thing that you're just now discovering.
Well,
that'll be pretty awesome.
Like I said, I would like to do it, but they don't announce to like the people probably until end of May. Like, yeah. And then the public won't be aware of it till maybe the end of June.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'd like to do it. It's fun. It's just, you know, we got to see if, I don't know, it's kind of, you got other options to choose from, right?
Daniel McGuire from the Bachelorette franchise and Bachelor franchise. Thanks for coming in. Congratulations. Good luck. We'll see you on TV.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. It's a 150. This is WGN. Steve, the strangest thing happened. So we said goodbye to our guest, the hunky Canadian Daniel McGuire.
Yeah.
And then opened up the door, and there's about 1,000 people on the other side.
Shockorama.
They had roses and champagne glasses, and he's now taking pictures.
Yeah, it's that way every time I leave that studio after the business lunch.
Well, I just want to make clear, so we'll post the picture, the group photo of us. I'm standing next to him, and just in case there's any confusion, I have the purple sweater, so...
And he has no shirt.
And he has a shirt on, but his shirt fits differently than mine does. I think he's, frankly, right. I think his shirts are a little small.
You know what? My shirts are tight like his too, but my shirts are tight lower.
Mother's Day is right around the corner. If your mom is a GN listener, and she is, it's the law, you know she's been hearing us talk about MyPillow. She probably wants to try one out. Give mom a MyPillow pillow for Mother's Day. It's the perfect gift, guaranteed to be the most comfortable pillow she'll ever own. If not, she gets her money back. It's warranted for 10 years. 25 million of them have been sold, and she'll see why. It's got a patented interlocking fill. It conforms to your head, your neck, your back, your spine. You get comfortable, and you stay in that comfortable position. It's got a built-in cooling effect, too. Isn't that nice to know? Right now, they'll give you 50% off their four-pack special. It includes two MyPillow premiums, the big ones, and then two of the smaller go-anywhere pillows. You need to use the promo code WGN. Go to MyPillow.com. Promo code is WGN or call 1-800-299-9579. 1-800-299-9579. When you call, make sure you use the promo code WGN. All right. So Daniel thinks that the best way to cast the show would be to get 10,000 women, or maybe 1,000, and then find ones that he can tell would be at least appealing to him. And then maybe you winnow it down to 100 or 1,000, and then he or the team comes through with those little micro conversations, and you can suddenly discover if there's a right or a wrong fit, and then you get it down to 100 or 50 or 25, however many would be on the show. I don't know why I haven't thought of that before, but that sounds like every guy's dream. I never thought about it before, too, that when you do The Bachelor, what if you're one of the bachelors? This was his case, and there's the bachelorette. I guess this would be the bachelorette. It's the one girl and all of the guys, one lady and all of the guys. And what if you go, oh, wow, I've just committed to this show, and I really don't want to win? That's kind of weird. I mean, a lot of us have had that experience. It's called the blind date, and you're not signed up for 16 weeks.
Well, can I tell you my favorite Spike Odell story?
Wait a minute, hold on. What's that, Elif? What are we going to say?
I was going to say we should have asked him, can't you just quit?
Oh, can you just walk off? Because people have done that on reality or competition shows for one reason or another.
Well, don't you get the cash? You just don't have to marry the person.
Yeah, I think, and I think he was actually okay with it enough. Like, he was into it. He wanted to win. He just didn't want to. He didn't want the prize. Okay, so what's your Spike Odell story?
So blind date. He told the story years ago where he went to this girl's house. He had a blind date, and he knocked on the door, and it just didn't look like it was going to be a good fit for him.
Yeah.
And he said, "Are you waiting for Spike Odell?" And she said, "Yes." And he said, "He told me to tell you he'll be here in half an hour."
Oh no!
Sorry, Spike.
Well done, Spike Odell. You know what? Even if that story's not true, keep telling that.
Right.
That's perfect. Jimmy Kimmel spoke about his son's surgery the other night, and it was just remarkable. I don't have the 15 minutes for the monologue that he gave, but I just want to play back a couple of highlights. And from there, we go into a conversation about healthcare, because that's really what he ended it on. It was just really a brilliant speech, and it was so heartfelt. And from there to where is the now amended idea of the health care bill. By the way, just as these commercials were playing that you just heard, The Bachelor walked back into the studio.
Yeah.
And he said, hey, you're still talking about me. And I said, yes, I am. And then I told him, I think that's a really good idea, what you've got there. That is, what's the point of lining up 25 girls or 25 guys for one person when you don't know if there's any sort of chemistry here or mm-hmm. there? So let's just line them up and say yes, no, boom, ba, bing.
Did he come back in because he didn't want you to be talking about him, or because he wanted to know where you got your purple sweater?
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to.
Millions of us had no access to health insurance.
Mm-hmm. Jimmy Kimmel there. This is little Johnny Williams here. It's 2:08 on WGN. We're here until 3 o'clock, so lots of ground to cover still in this hour. Including the story in the next half hour of the lady who had... She bought the house and then found out that her house had an infestation of... Did you hear what the house had an infestation of?
I think I heard your promo.
Snakes.
Yikes.
She had snakes. I understand if you've got termites or maybe you've got a wasp nest. Maybe you've got bats in your attic. And by that, I mean bats in your attic. But what if you had snakes? What do you do when they go, we have a snake? She had a snake problem. She does not live in Brazil or wherever there are snakes. In fact, she lived not too far from my house in Minneapolis. She's like living in a suburban neighborhood. No reason to think you'd have a snake problem. I'll tell you that story. Jimmy Kimmel was on talking. He finally came back. He was gone for a little while. His wife was pregnant. They had their son. And everything went well. They did not know there would be any problem, he said. And the delivery was fine. And you're doing the thing where you're holding the baby, taking the pictures. And then things started to go bad.
A very attentive nurse at Cedars-Sinai Hospital, her name is Nanoush, was checking him out and heard a murmur in his heart, which is common with newborn babies, but she also noticed he was a bit purple. So I accompanied Billy and the nurse, went down the hall to another part of the hospital, the neonatal ICU, where another excellent nurse named Ann checked him out and called the doctor in. And now all of a sudden it felt serious. So now more doctors and nurses and equipment come in, and it's a terrifying thing. My wife is back in the recovery room. She has no idea what's going on, and I'm standing in the middle of a lot of very worried looking people, kind of like right now, who are trying to figure out what the problem is. And it's Friday night, and so they call a pediatric cardiologist, Dr. Evan Zahn, who, when they called him, was picking his mother up from the airport. They did an echocardiogram, which is a sonogram of the heart, and found that Billy was born with a heart disease. And then they brought my wife in, and they wheeled her in, and Dr. Zahn told her what was going on and what our options were. And we decided to take him to Children's Hospital, where there's a world-renowned cardiac surgeon who is, by all accounts, a genius. His name is Dr. Vaughn Starnes. So we put the baby in an ambulance to Children's Hospital, Los Angeles. And on Monday morning, Dr. Starnes opened his chest and fixed one of the two defects in his heart. He went in there with a scalpel and did some kind of magic that I couldn't even begin to explain. He opened the valve, and the operation was a success. It was the longest 3 hours of my life. But it was a success.
So he started his monologue.
He'll have to have another open-heart surgery.
So that's how he started his monologue, and it was just really touching because then he went on to describe how 6 days later the kid is home, and he talked about everybody. He remembered the names and then had some written down, but he was just so personal in his appreciation. It reminded you a little bit of David Letterman when he survived his... Did David Letterman have a heart attack? He had heart surgery, and when he came back on, he actually had the whole team behind the curtain, and they opened it up, and he thanked the entire team that saved him. So let's go to part four here, Elif. This is just, again, him thanking some of the people that saved his son's life.
Thanks, especially thanks to everyone here at the show, all my coworkers who sent a box of cards that it meant a lot to my wife. I didn't read them, but they meant a lot to her. Thanks to my work family. I want to thank my work family and my actual family, starting with my cousin, Dr. Denise Hayes, who happens to be a pediatric cardiologist in New York. There's one smart person in our family, and She counseled us. She explained everything to everyone in our family over and over again, so I didn't have to. Thank you, Denise. And special extra thanks to my mom and dad and my mother-in-law, Mickey, my kids, Katie and Kevin, my cousins, my sister, my brother, my sisters-in-law, my brothers-in-law. They all really came through in so many ways, as did my friends. Every one of my friends were there 100% of the time for us. We had atheists praying for us, okay?
So, Kimmel, then, last thing, and, you know, we play all of that to maybe get to this point, because he makes a point about health care. I mean, he was talking about how this children's hospital in Los Angeles is funded in part and how some of that funding is in peril. He also said that people make donations to children's hospitals, and I thought it was just so sweet and smart and kind and thoughtful that they put the donate web address for that hospital up on the screen. He said that a lot of the floors themselves are sponsored. In fact, he was on the Costco floor, or his son was, on the Costco floor at that children's hospital. And I didn't know that companies like that do that, but I think we should pat them on the back and sing their praise when they do. Maybe they do it in part because they get good publicity, but I never knew that, and now I do. But then he made this point about healthcare.
I'm so happy we had this baby together. I'm definitely getting a vasectomy after this. And I want to say one other thing. President Trump last month proposed a $6 billion cut in funding to the National Institute of Health. And thank God our congressman made a deal last night to not go along with that. They actually increased funding by $2 billion. And I applaud them for doing that. More than 40% of the people who would have been affected by those cuts to the National Institute of Health our children, and it would have a major impact on a lot of great places, including Children's Hospital in Los Angeles, which is so unbelievably sad to me. We were brought up to believe that we live in the greatest country in the world, but until a few years ago, millions and millions of us had no access to health insurance at all. You know, before 2014, if you were born with congenital heart disease like my son was, there was a good chance you'd never be able to get health insurance because you had a pre-existing condition. You were born with a pre-existing condition. If your parents didn't have medical insurance, you might not live long enough to even get denied because of a pre-existing condition. If your baby is going to die, and it doesn't have to, it shouldn't matter how much money you make. I think that's something that, whether you're a Republican or a Democrat or something else, we all agree on that, right? I mean, we do.
And they all did. Jimmy Kimmel the other night. I posted the whole thing, just a link to it on my Facebook page. I'm King John on Facebook, and you can like us there. But it's just really remarkable storytelling and a harrowing thing they went through. And hooray, even the atheists were praying for his son, and it sounds like it's got a good ending. It's 2:15. We reached out to Mary Agnes Carey again, partnerships editor and senior correspondent at Kaiser Health News, to talk to us a little bit about where the health care bill is. Hi, Mary Agnes. It's John Williams again. Welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So let's just quick do the headlines on that. Where are we today on this sort of revised health care bill?
Republican leaders are hunting for votes. As I think you mentioned earlier, two key Republicans who had opposed it are now saying they're for it, Billy Long and Fred Upton. That may persuade some other Republicans to come along, but it's a razor-thin margin that they are trying to get this bill to the floor. It's unclear what's going to happen next. We expect to hear more news tonight about other potential changes to the bill. As you mentioned, I think earlier, there was an additional change. They added some more money for these high-risk pools that would states could apply for a waiver from the Affordable Care Act to set them up. And so we're just going to see how it plays out and if we'll have a vote on the House, possibly. We've heard some rumors. I don't have them chased down. Maybe tonight. My guess is if they're going to do it, it would be tomorrow, because they're still going to have to do some vote counting to see where they are.
Are you surprised that they're going back to this and this quickly? I thought that this thing was dead in the water and we wouldn't see anything meaningful on it for a while.
There's a couple of things to throw into this conversation. Number one, we've heard the president and Republicans talk about how they want to turn to tax reform. That is going to be a heavy lift. If you think health care is hard, taxes, especially overhauling the tax system, is going to be even harder. But they have also talked a lot. As we know, Republicans in their campaigns for the last several cycles have said they want to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act. It's a high priority for President Trump. He really wanted this vote before the 100-day mark of his presidency, and he didn't get it. So he's putting on pressure. He met with Republicans today at the White House to try to persuade them. Mike Pence, his vice president, has been going to the Hill. There's going to be more party caucuses where they all get together and talk, probably tonight and tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they're really putting on the pressure to try to close this deal. And remember, this isn't the end for this measure. If the House passes it, it's going to go to the Senate, and it's probably going to get changed, and then it's going to have to come back and to the House, and we'll see this play out all over again. So this is just the first step in what could be kind of a long journey.
How receptive is the Senate, do you think, generally?
Well, they've had some problems over there with some Republicans who are concerned. One thing we have to think about when we talk about this proposal, they've focused a lot on this amendment that has emerged in the last week that would deal with states being able to waive essential health benefits and have different coverage for people that had a lap. If people had a lap
right.
in their coverage, a lapse, you know, that kind of thing, in the pre-existing condition. But the underlying bill still has big problems. Congressional Budget Office, the official scorekeeper for Washington, has said 24 million more people wouldn't have coverage by 2026. We've got all those changes in Medicaid, big cuts,
well, can
converting
you
Can
you tell me what is new about this? You mentioned the $9 billion for this one pool for critical patients, but what else has changed that would cause that many members, maybe the most conservative members of the House, to change their opinion?
Well, the thing, just to clarify, the additional $8 billion is on top of something like $130 billion. So they've got a fairly large pool of money for risk pools and to help insurers cover the high-cost cases. Now, whether or not that will be sufficient, I don't know. But I think it's an observation of the calendar, if you will. Here we are in May. This Congress came in January. They've been telling people forever they're going to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act. Rush Limbaugh was saying yesterday on the radio, if they can't do this, why are people voting Republican? I mean, I think they're looking at this critical juncture where they're trying to deliver on a promise they made to their electorate.
Fine.
And they've stumbled and stumbled. I think that's why they're trying to do it, and they want to get on tax reform, and they're very eager to get health care off the table, at least in the House for this moment.
Really? So the only thing that's really changing is the calendar? I mean, there aren't fundamental changes that are going to make this new bill that much different?
Well, I think here's the thing you got to remember. Let's go back a month ago when it all kind of fell apart on the House floor. The conservatives were the group that were very upset about the bill. They said it wasn't going to lower premiums. It wasn't going to make health insurance more affordable. With this potential ability of a state to go in and get a waiver from rules of the Affordable Care Act, and these are rules that conservatives think are the most onerous, the conservatives say, okay, they controlled a block of about 30 votes, and they say now, from their view, health insurance will be more affordable. Now the shift is to the moderates, and they are saying, we don't think people with pre-existing conditions are covered. We're worried about waiving
right.
the required benefits. That's
right.
kind of the shift in dynamic that's happened.
Well, I want to be clear that I understand that. So the states could waive the requirement that you have to insure people with pre-existing conditions?
Here's the way it would work. A state would have to say, we have a proposal that would reduce premiums or increase enrollment, increase choice, right? So if you had a gap, the only thing, this applies to people that have a gap in their coverage. If you didn't have health insurance for 63 days, then an insurer could go in and look at your medical history and charge you a different rate than others in your same age group, for example. It would get rid of this thing called community rating. It would change that where an insurer could charge you more for your health insurance. But they would also have to have these high-risk pools that are set up. Those are special insurance pools that tend to insure the sickest people. They would have to. They could also possibly have a proposal where they go to insurers and try to help them with the highest-cost cases. This is called reinsurance. But part of the concern about this is when people look at the history of risk pools, while there have been some that have been successful, they're often underfunded. They often charge high premiums, and sometimes they have waiting lists of people who want to get on and can't get covered because, remember, if you're going to insure the most expensive people, that's going to be an expensive pool to insure. So that's some of the dynamic that's happening there.
So what do we think about that, Mary Agnes?
Well, I think that it is – the question for me is we haven't had an outside – we just talked about the Congressional Budget Office briefly a moment ago that said the underlying Republican bill was going to leave 24 million more uninsured, right, in 2016. that same office, Congressional Budget Office, at least as of this moment, has not scored this particular changes, this set of changes, this amendment. So we don't have an outside entity that has been an objective entity like the Congressional Budget Office saying this is how we view this bill. But, I mean, there are a lot of analysts that are extremely concerned that the waiving of the essential health benefits or the ability to go in and charge sicker people more if they have had this break in coverage, and also states would be allowed to charge higher rates for people, for older people. The Affordable Care Act has that at a ratio of 3-1, and states could go 5-1 or even higher under this amendment. So there's several provisions that are giving people pause, and that's why it's made it so hard for Republican leaders in the House to round up the votes.
Okay, well, let's see what happens. Maybe you and I can touch bases Friday, Monday, Tuesday, sometime next week, maybe the year after that, maybe the year after that.
I'm around.
Mary Agnes, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
She is Mary Agnes Carey, Partnerships Editor and Senior Correspondent for Kaiser Health News. This is WGN. Training for the jobs of tomorrow starts today. See why more schools are teaching kids computing coding. That's a computer coding. Even in kindergarten. That's tonight's cover story on WGN TV News at 9. Mother's Day is right around the corner. How about that? How about giving mom the gift of dance? An Arthur Murray gift certificate will treat your mom to the world of ballroom dancing. She'll love it. Ballroom dancing is tons of fun. It's great exercise. It's an excellent stress reliever. Arthur Murray has 9 Chicagoland locations. One sure to be close by. Call 312-644-7554 or purchase your gift certificate online at ChicagoArthurMurray.com. That's ChicagoArthurMurray.com. They don't know. President and former First Lady are in town at that library to talk about. I saw that the Obama Foundation has issued their Chicago playlist, and this song is on there. Let's see what else is on there. What they did was they asked some famous people to submit something that would be a Chicago-centric song. So Family Business by Kanye West is on the list. Freedom Highway by the Staples Singers is on the list. If you Google Obama Foundation Chicago playlist and you ever want a Chicago playlist, here's at least some people in the music business and some celebrities' suggestion for your Chicago playlist. Sweet Home Chicago by Robert Johnson. Chicago performed by Frank Sinatra. They Say by Common. Love that song. Keep On Pushing by Curtis Mayfield and The Impressions. Moon Shoes by Raven Lanae. Blessings by Chance the Rapper. Get Behind the Mule and Come On Up to the House by Tom Waits. And the list goes on. It's interesting. I don't know that it's all the same kind of music. It might be a little whiplash there from one artist to another, but it's actually a pretty good list. Not bad. In that monologue that Jimmy Kimmel did the other night, did you guys do this, Steve? He said that when you bring home a new baby, you are supposed to tell, if there is, that baby's older sibling that the baby has brought a gift, and then you give a gift to the 2 or 3 or 4 or 5-year-old who's trying to process this whole thing. They don't know what's going on, and right. Now I've got a sibling, and it's very complicated. So if the baby brings a gift, ka-ching, they go, hey, baby's kind of a good thing. Did you guys do that?
No, I don't. Well, I shouldn't say I don't remember doing that. Did you?
Yeah, we did.
Really?
Yeah, we did. I'm trying to remember what it was. I think it was a bicycle. I think we Grant got his little red bicycle.
Wow.
When Griffin was born.
But I remember I got Sharon gifts.
Yeah, right. That was another thing, too, at the time. I don't know if
but
they still
do that.
But
she was fine with the baby coming into the house, so.
She didn't mind?
No.
This is Bill. Hey, Bill, this is John. What's on your mind?
Yes. I watched the Jimmy Kimmel talk on TV as without a dry eye.
Yeah.
In March of March 7th of 1980, our daughter was born with the exact same diagnosis, tetralogy of Fallot. And we immediately took her to Children's Memorial Hospital, and it was quite an experience. And just can't watch that with a dry eye. And when you see the picture of the baby with all the monitors hooked up and everything, it's pretty tough. But, you know, technology has changed so much since then. And that little baby just celebrated her 37th birthday.
How about that?
And yeah. And it was such a subtle reminder as to what we went through. And it's a series of operations to correct the four congenital defects associated with the disease. But that was pretty hard to watch. But, you know, the best thing anybody can do is try to support somebody. And I don't care if you're Jimmy Kimmel or just, you know, the average Joe. You're all in the same boat in a situation like this. And the people at Children's Memorial Hospital, now Lurie Hospital, were absolutely fantastic, including Dr. Roger Cole, the cardiologist, Dr. Idris De Leon, Dr. Aziz, and Dr. Zabawi. You never forget things like that. And when you see something like that, your heart really pours out for them.
37 years later, you still remember the names of the doctors, don't you?
I remember. I can relive everything. And you know, the second operation, that was a tough one. We sat in that room for over 12 hours while she was having her a correction. And it's when he says those were the longest 3 hours, I hope they remain at 3 hours, because back in 1980, they didn't have as much technology. They didn't have the technology then that they have now.
Yeah.
But it doesn't matter if it's 1 minute or 12 and a half hours. It's the same. And do I remember everything? Yeah.
You know, it's funny because I remember my son being born, and that was, and it was fine. Everything was fine. But it is surreal to be there in the room when the baby's being delivered. And then if it goes the way it went for you and Jimmy, that must be almost impossible to manage. I'm glad that everything worked out. I got to take a break for the news, Bill, but my best to you and your daughter, and congratulations.
Everybody's doing well. Thank you.
Thank you, Steve. 241. More from the Obama Foundation Chicago playlist, Chance the Rapper. Praise him till I'm gone. When the praises go up, good God! I was talking to a woman in Minneapolis. I do two radio shows in two different cities. That's not going to last much longer, but so I have this dual life. And a woman was on the air with me in Minnesota yesterday, and at her suburban Minneapolis home she bought in October, I think she bought it in the fall, the house was fine, it was newer, everything was good. And then when they went in, they found a couple little snakes in the basement. I don't know what your wife's reaction would be to, well, we've got a couple snakes in the basement of the new house. But at my house, that wouldn't go well. That's not the same as, oh, we saw a bug. Or we've had a bat in our house. We've had bats there before. Maybe you've had a squirrel or one of those little, you know, little tree vermin get in your house before. That could happen. But snakes. So she tells the story. She says that they said, okay, they got the snakes out, but then there were more snakes. She has so far, they count them now, removed 105 snakes from her house.
What?
And there's probably over 300 that they've caught in their yard. Evidently, their house sits on a nest of garter snakes that are up to 3 feet long.
Well, that's more than a nest.
That's
right?
Like an Indiana Jones scene, isn't
right.
it?
It's like a Disneyland or something where they come.
This is all real. So she had the pest control guy come out, and he said, well, you sure got a lot of snakes down there.
I've never heard of that.
They keep catching them, and I haven't either. My number is 312-981-7200, and I'm just wondering if you can share with me what your infestations have been. How did you notice? How weird was it? How did you get rid of them? I don't know if anybody's ever had a garter snake problem. Thank goodness they were garters and not rattlers. If they were king cobras or something, well, now you have to sell the house. I said to her, did the previous owner disclose that we have a snake problem? And she said they didn't, but it was rented to people for a long time. And the renters, they say, never told them. And I said, no, renters tell them. Renters tell landlords, we have snakes. The difference is landlords don't do anything about it and homeowners do. So the guy's like, well, I'm glad I'm not sleeping there. And the woman's bedroom is in the basement where the snakes are. She finds them in the laundry. Snakes, live snakes.
Hundreds.
And she's also snake phobic, so she sleeps upstairs.
Well, who wouldn't be?
I know. If you weren't, you are now. And whenever she goes down to do the laundry, the kids have to go and canvas the joint and pick up all the snakes. They use snake traps, which are glue pads. And the same way you catch a mouse, the snake slithers across the pad, gets its wheels stuck, and then the kids come down and pick up the live snake on the pad and take it out. And they've done that 100 times.
That is unbelievable.
What kind of snakes are they?
Well, except that they're garter snakes, I don't know much about them. I think a garter snake will eat a mouse.
That's what I was going to ask. Yeah, what are the dangers of it?
I think the danger is they're pretty
small, garter snakes.
Yeah, they don't get huge, but I don't know, is 3 foot pretty big to you?
Well, yeah, but I don't think they get very thick, you know. They're
Tell that to Brenda. Brenda, that snake that's right. The size of a yardstick, right? Half the height of me. It's not that thick.
It's rarely stretched out all the way either.
And they hardly ever bite people.
Right.
I think garter snakes have teeth, though, don't they? I mean, they got to eat something. So she said that when it gets warmer, I don't know if this is the good news or the bad news, but they'll probably start to come out from underneath the foundation of the house.
She's in Minnesota?
Yeah.
So she's got 3 months.
I want to know, well, but then you can get them. But I think, you know... I don't know what get them means because I don't think you get all of them. As soon, you know, I don't know that I want to know how many are down there, to be honest with you. But, Steve, don't you think you should have some sort of recourse?
Yes.
Can't you go back to the previous owner and go, snakes?
Right.
If you just both stand before Judge Wapner and the one person goes, snakes, case over, $1,000. No. You have to give the house. You get out of the house and they have to give you your money back. You get a complete refund.
Can't they fumigate or something?
I said, don't you have a flamethrower or something, but it's under the house.
Flames could be tricky.
Well, it's like in the foundation of the house. She said that they had a hole in the foundation on the side of the wall. And when here's a scene for you. So they pull, it's a finished basement. They pull off the drywall and there's water and mold and snakes.
Wow.
Living there. Violetta just went like this. Oh.
Yeah, I don't care what kind of snakes they are. That sounds horrible.
I know. There's no good kind of snake to have. There's a worse kind of snake to have, but snake is bad. All of our phone lines are ringing here at WGN. LF, you said somebody hung up who had something remarkable to say. So what is the bizarre story? We get lots of calls. We'll pick up the phones. But what was the call you lost?
Well, her parents bought a house that was built on the nest of garter snakes, and her mom used to use a lawnmower to run over those snakes.
Right. That's one way to fix the garter snakes.
Graphic.
That you have, but that still doesn't mean... I'm kind of with Steve. How do you get rid of the nest? Like, they keep coming out. That's fine. But you have to get rid of the babies and the moms and the whole family. This is Jack. Jack, this is John. You're on the air. Hi.
Hey, how you guys doing today?
Real good. What's on your mind?
Hey, just a little information. Garter snakes do gather together in groups for the wintertime to hibernate together.
Yeah.
And so if that owner said that they had no idea that those snakes were there, they're lying because they did not decide overnight that they were going to party there at that house that day.
Yeah.
It's been going on for years and years and years. So, But garter snakes are harmless. They don't eat mice, generally. Mostly little critters like toads and frogs and salamanders and stuff. But, yeah, those things have been there for a long, long time, and they'll probably keep coming back, too.
I know. Well, this is the thing. I think you got to find – then isn't this the nut of it, Jack? You got to find the hole where the snakes are coming into the house, right?
I would guess so. Generally, they'll find like a pit or a cave. A natural cave was probably there, and that's where they were originally going to. And however, instincts keeps them coming back every year. And so, yeah, you can block up the holes into the house, but they are still going to come back to the property.
Yeah, but I think I'd want to live with that, but that's better than them coming in. So if they keep coming back and nesting under my house, all right, fine, I'll live with that, as long as they can't get into the laundry room. But they keep coming inside our house. You pick up the blue jeans, and there's a 3-foot snake in the kid's pants. And by that, I mean there's a 3-foot snake in the kid's pants. Isn't that crazy?
It is. And really, sell the house is probably their only choice. Upside is,
yeah,
rattlesnakes also do the same thing, so it could be worse.
When you sell that house, Jack, do you tell the next buyer that it has a snake problem?
I certainly wouldn't. By law, I think I'm required to, but not if I want to sell a house, I wouldn't. Unless it was to somebody like me, I'd love it. I'd be in heaven when those things came every year.
Thanks for the call, Jack.
Take care, guys.
Bye-bye. As Kathy and Judy would say, how does Mrs. Jack feel about that? Except they didn't use that voice. Tom, you're on WGN. What can I do for you?
Hi, Tom.
Hey.
Hi, John.
Hey.
My wife used to work at Brookfield Zoo, and they would get all kinds of strange calls. And sometimes they'd be able to talk to one of the handlers, in this case, the reptile house.
Yeah.
And the handlers might be able to give them some suggestions. But I'm surprised Manfredini hasn't called in, because he knows everything about everything.
This is kind of in Lou's wheelhouse. I'll bet he would at least know how to close up the hole so that the animal doesn't come in, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, thanks for the phone call. I guess Lou's not listening today.
And they said they don't even eat mice, so what's the point of having them there?
Right, because they're not taking care of your mice problem, right?
Right. I mean, I don't know if I hate snakes or mice more, but
if at least one was eating the other, that'd be right. The upside. Well, put it this way, Violetta, you'll never get a mouse problem.
Right, because I'm not moving out of my parents' house, or why?
No, because, well, I mean, if you lived in this house, you would have at least the snakes.
Right, exactly.
So moving forward, you could say, it does have a snake problem, but we've got this great mouse control system, and you'll never have mice.
Good point.
I lived in Hawaii once upon a time, and I think this is the way the story goes. Hawaii has a snake and a mongoose problem. Mongoose, you know, it's one of these little toothy rodents. And somehow or another, the snakes came to the island, and they didn't know how they were there, but they knew that the mongoose would eat the snakes. So they imported mongoose onto the island of Oahu for the purpose of taking care of the snakes. The problem is, one of them comes out at night and the other one does not. So now they have both snakes that they don't want, and they have mongoose, which are running all over the place, and they can't get rid of them either. Let's talk to Marlene. Marlene, this is John. You're on the air. What can I do for you?
Hi there.
Hey.
I just wanted to let you guys know that I had a pet gardener snake when I was 12 years old.
Do you want 1,000 of them?
Yeah, and I would put it down the top of my blouse. It would crawl all the way down my dress. It would crawl all the way down and out. And then I'd catch it, and I kept it in this big, well, it was only a gallon. That's why it couldn't have been that big of a gardener snake. And I kept it in there, and eventually it died. We gave it a funeral and everything, but the other story is when I got married and had a few kids, there was a gardener snake, and I don't even remember what they look like, but back then I did, and there was a gardener snake, and the whole neighborhood is screaming, and they thought I was the bravest woman they ever saw, and I went right over, picked up the gardener snake, and said, "Hello, gardener snake," and then I threw it over the fence, and they went, that's my story.
Thanks for the call, Marlene. Real quick here, hey, Jennifer, what would you do if that was your house?
I would have to move. I'm so petrified. I'm absolutely petrified.
Can you imagine?
Yeah. I mean, to the point when I was a kid, my sister and her friends, in order for me to go to the basement, I had to look in the shoebox, because the shoebox supposedly had a snake in it, and I wouldn't even, and come to find out it was like a rubber snake all these years. But that's how they kept me out of playing with them, the older sister and the neighbor.
That's a real phobia. I mean, it's not just like, I don't like squirrels or something. Snakes, people have a sort of deep-seated reaction to,
Give me mice, give me spiders, I am fine with all that. Once it gets bigger than a worm, I'm out.
Good luck to you, Jennifer. Thanks for the call. This is a realtor on line one. Hey, Kathleen.
Hello.
Do I have to disclose snakes?
You have to disclose snakes. You do. You have to disclose any flaw that you have in your house by law, or the person that bought the house from you can make you buy your house back. And I know that, I mean, you it's a fine line, but, if you don't disclose what's wrong with your house, not only can the people that sell the house be in trouble, so can the realtor that listed the house.
Yeah, I get that. Maybe that's where push comes to shove, because I have probably got 1,000 stories about people who have bought houses from people who didn't disclose flaws. I have never heard of the other party taking the house back. Does that ever happen?
Yeah, it happens. It's, you know, it doesn't happen often. It depends on what it is. But usually what happens is the party that sold the house will pay to fix whatever the flaw is.
Yeah, I think that's probably it. Hey, I'm out of time, but interesting point. Kathleen, thanks for the call. Lots of calls about this. Maybe we'll jump back at this tomorrow. Ro and Ann are coming up on WGN. Hi, kids.
Hey, John.
Hello, John.
Hi.
John, much coming up on the program today. Hold on, I have to adjust my microphone. I've never seen one of these before. I don't know how they work.
Yeah, you didn't know you were going to need that, did you?
Able to figure it out.
No,
right.
I don't know what. And it's really not. It is. It's a very complicated piece of equipment. You point it at your mouth, and I'm like a stuffed bear. I'm not sure where my mouth is. Michael Steele is going to join us coming up about the healthcare budget compromise. And did you say this?
Mm-hmm.
That the president met with the president of the Palestinian Authority today?
Yeah.
Do we know that was going to happen?
I don't think
the president knew it was going to happen.
No.
He just tweeted, he just said, hey, give me somebody.
And he said Palestine and Israel peace will get it done.
Yeah, we're going to get it done. I mean, maybe Jared did get, maybe got it done.
I was just going to say, I hope he tagged Jared on that tweet because
yeah.
That's his job.
I mean, it was just astounding to me. And then because yesterday they were talking about moving the embassy to Israel, to Jerusalem, which, of course, the Palestinians, you know, think is an affront. And mm-hmm. So I'm not quite sure how this
all
went.
I thought they backed off that, though. That was the campaign pledge. And then right afterwards,
yesterday,
it was
Pence was talking about it.
Really?
Yes. As recently as yesterday. So it was like, what?
That's such a gigantic thing. Diplomatically, you'd think that this week with taxes and health care and
absolutely.
Comey testifying.
One thing at a time, guys.
Let it breathe a little
bit.
Yeah,
take your
right?
time. It's okay. Got 4 years. No, I don't. So Susie Sunshine is going to be here talk about the Fed. And they made a little bit of a surprise announcement today. Fergie Jenkins.
Did you see, Ro? She was wearing her pearls, Janet Yellen.
Yes, if Janet Yellen wears the pearls.
Tells you something.
I did not know. That's a tell.
Yeah. Pearls on, pearls off. Yeah.
Big tell, John.
Yeah. But it was a little bit of a misdirect because she's not raising the – they're not going to raise the rates, but they open up – because generally pearls on, rates go up, pearls off, down, you know, sort of thing. But now – but they said that there probably will be two this year. So, I don't know. Susie Sunshine, she understands
she'll
all that stuff. She'll explain it.
Fergie
Jenkins is going to be here. And listen to this. They are looking for – in the Rockford area, for our Rockford listeners, if you are a mechanic – in the Rockford area, a major economic development is about to occur, and we'll explain what that is. We're going to get some people some jobs, and Ron Majors joins us to handicap the Kentucky Derby.
Now, is this a 4-hour show, a 10-hour show? How are you doing?
How
all
will
this?
We do it
we
all?
We do 30 seconds per person. Everything I just said, we do for 30 seconds at a time.
Have a good show, Ro.
Thank you very much.